The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets. My name is Paul Hill. I'm delighted again to be able to speak to CEO Jonathan Hunter and CFO Neil Pritchard of Alico, a leading build tech software developer for all things project management and the maintenance of property assets. So big welcome, gents.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Good morning, Paul.
Well, big congrats on this morning's strong and in-line half-year trading update, with sales increasing 15% like-for-like to £19.9 million. So maybe we can start there, Jonathan. I suppose you could just quickly walk us through what's been driving that really impressive top-line growth.
Yeah, the demand we're seeing remains resilient across the group, despite the macroeconomic uncertainty and geopolitical volatility. But we're seeing the challenges that are facing our customers. They really haven't gone away in construction. Continued need for better planning, better cost control, improved productivity. And asset owners continue to focus on maximizing asset uptime and operational efficiency. So those problems that our customers have are structural rather than cyclical, and that's why we continue to see, you know, demand for the software. It's very healthy. We're seeing growth within, you know, we've got a very well established customer base, so, you know, expansion and upselling, a high degree of renewals as well in this first half. So churn figures have been low. We're also attracting new customers as well to the business. So overall, good results, I think, a sign of, you know, it reflects the hard work and also the quality of product and demands of the customers.
Yeah, just on one of those new customers, I saw you slipped it in at the bottom there. You'd signed a really big sort of like medical devices company out in the US. Can you just give us a bit of sort of like sort of context of that? Because that's quite a flagship contract for that PMAC acquisition that you did.
It is. It's strategically important because it positions us in the US with a very well known and respected manufacturing business. We can't mention the name just yet because we're just going through the implementation, but it's going very well. They use PMAC within Europe, their manufacturing site in Europe, but the US one is their flagship site. So that's going to lead to the software being used, hopefully, in further sites. There's already actually discussions to prepare a second site in North America. So hopefully more good news to report later in the year on that one. But yeah, strategically important. We've actually, it's allowed us to identify, you know, when you, like anything, customers like to hear a reference case, so they want to know who else is using it. And when you've got an excellent reference case with that, it does help, you know, drive further business. Mm. So in preparation for that, we're working with some partners on the service side, but we've actually appointed a new US business development manager, started actually last week with us, so very fresh. But you know, we see the opportunity, so we've got some support on the ground to try and drive some of that, close some of the demand. That's
Well, just keep rinse and repeating that strategy in America. That's a fabulous contract to win. Also, just in terms of the upselling, obviously at the full year, this was, I think it was in April, when you talked about the 2025 NRR, which obviously is, you know, I think it was about 110%. I saw Canaccord put a number out that was about 110%. Is it that sort of like level at the moment? Are you sort of like still doing good, strong upsell?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. It's remaining at, you know, those strong, very good levels. You know, anything above 100% is seen as really, really good. Mm. So yeah, we continue into 2026 with that similar trend. Indeed.
Brilliant. Okay, fantastic. Let's move over now to the numbers. Do you want to take us through sort of the key highlights there, Neil? I'm surprised. I've got a smile over my face looking at those figures. So please take us through.
Yeah, no, I think we've got smiles too. It's good. It's great. Yeah, no, we're very pleased and really appreciative of, all the hard work everyone does, and obviously our customers, who we continue to see those sort of strong demands and desire for our products and so forth. So yeah, look, it's record ARR, recurring growth and strong organic growth underlying that. I think it's probably worth, well, I'll come on to mention it, but probably just m worth mentioning that obviously post the year end numbers, but announced sort of around about year end and just after, was the divestment of the sort of non-core business of Vewz, and also a smaller acquisition of Keyview. And it's very important for us to kind of take those numbers out to get to an underlying sort of like for like basis as well, which we term within the trading update as organic. So I guess in terms of the headlines, Paul, you've got the annualized recurring revenue. So that's kind of the exit rate at this stage, being the half year. That's at 30th of June. And that's increased headline rate 16%. But actually, the underlying organic rate is 23%, which is an improvement over the year end at sort of 20% levels as well. So, if anything, an acceleration. The overall recurring revenues across the 6 months, those headline rate increased by 14%. But again, that's actually underlying was 20%. So really, really good numbers there across the whole period, not just the exit rate. And clearly, that now represents recurring revenues now at 85%, whereas, pre-SaaS transition, you're talking 55 or less, so it's as a proportion of total revenue. So that's really, really good. Total revenues, I think you mentioned they're 8% up, but again, underlying organic 15%. And yeah, we're pleased with the with cash as well. I mean, there have been some one-offs and the acquisition, for example, the increased dividend for shareholders, which we always like to see. And there are some other sort of one-offs and operational costs, again, relating to views and other things. So it was always going to be sort of lower than the year end, but actually the underlying growth and cash generation with the business very high. So it's at 15.4 at the end of June. That compares to the previous June of 12.2 and the year end of 16.3. And it's worth mentioning that there's a group we don't have any debt either. So
Yeah, well, I mean, just highlight to investors. I mean, I've owned the shares now for 11 years, and I don't think I've ever come up across the company doing such strong organic growth. So, a big tip to the hat. And just moving on to
Thank you.
sort of like top level there, Jonathan, because obviously the industry, but the sort of investors are very nervous about the term SaaS apocalypse. Does that mean is there anything at the moment that you're seeing coming through on the business? Because I can't see it at all, but how are you sort of like thinking about it?
Well, yeah, I think the SaaS apocalypse is more relevant to businesses that provide generic horizontal workflows where AI can easily or relatively easily replace their existing user interface. And I think Alico is very different. We have best of breed specialist solutions. We operate in specialist vertical markets where value comes from really deep domain expertise. We provide industry or work with industry specific workflows with decades and decades of data and customer data, and which is really structured. So I think that we see AI as an opportunity rather than a threat. Our strategy around AI is focused on working with people, expert humans, keeping them in the loop to really help them with efficiency and visibility, predictability, identifying risks and so forth. So helping professionals in their day-to-day work, but ensuring that they remain accountable for delivering projects and governing projects and so forth, having ownership over project delivery and operations. So I think the nature of the sort of feature-rich capability that our products have and the business intelligence and logic within the software that makes it difficult to replicate with AI alone. I think that's why we don't see it as a threat in terms of the SaaS apocalypse. And the results just speak for that as well. Customers are still, renewing. We've got high renewal rates and good revenue growth. So customers are still adopting the software.
And how are you sort of incorporating the new sort of like AI or new sort of facilities into your products? I mean, I think it was you talked briefly about, I think it was Asta Vision Plus, where you're doing those APIs. Can you just talk us through how that's going to help the customers?
Yeah, it's really AI is probably the most exciting opportunity we've seen in our business and our industry ever. So, there's so much opportunity. And I think it's there's a risk of obviously trying to move very quickly. We'll see companies trip, I think, trying to just adopt AI very rapidly, and then it exposes poor data or exposes reputational risk and so forth. So, over time, I think we will use more AI. I think AI will accelerate our ability to deliver better functionality in products, bring innovation to our products, to our customers much more quickly. But we're taking a really practical approach to utilizing AI, focused on solving real customer problems. That's really important. We're not just implementing AI that customers just think didn't really do much, interesting, intelligent, but didn't actually solve the issue. So we're really focusing on that. That's in our DNA on how we build products anyway. And yeah, using AI, as I said earlier, just to make better decisions, to identify risks earlier, improve productivity, whilst keeping skilled humans, operators, firmly in the loop, ensuring accountability, ownership, and safety and so forth of projects and operations. So I think, better visibility, helping people sort of gain more certainty around their projects, plans, and their delivery. So really, really supporting people and working, working with customers to deliver that.
No, I think exactly that a practical approach makes much a great deal of sense. Just in terms of sort of, that subject, we have seen a couple of other software companies. In fact, there's a couple of small ones in on AIM. We've had Craneware, the US hospitals business, and we've had Microlise, a telematics company, who have got, cyber breaches. Can you just quickly talk us through how, the sort of the controls around making sure or trying to avoid getting, the company's software getting hacked?
It's cybersecurity is board and leadership level led. It's a priority that's on our sort of agenda every month. Our software supports, very important operational and business processes for customers. So maintaining trust is absolutely critical for, for their reputation and our reputation. So to do that, we do have ISO 27001 accreditation, which is in cyber essentials and so forth. But with those accreditations, we operate a comprehensive security framework. It includes regular security reviews, vulnerability testing, and most importantly, I believe, is employee awareness and training and testing. So on a monthly basis, we test our organization for with a phishing-prone score. Just we test our people to see if they click on things they shouldn't, and if they do, they get further training. So that's proving to be very good because we, bring out of them. It reduces.
I had one this very day, and thankfully I said it, I identified it correctly as phishing. So I can verify that for sure.
So that's ongoing, as well as the ongoing, investment in our infrastructure and controls. So the cyber threat continues. I guess it continues to evolve, especially with AI and so forth. So no organization can really afford to be complacent. Therefore, we continuously review, strengthen our security posture and governance. And it's embedded within our product development process as well as our day-to-day operations.
Brilliant. Okay, great. Well, let's move to the sort of the second half and the road ahead there. And Neil, can you just quickly take us through the sort of like the visibility you see in H2 and sort of like the growth and how you see it working out?
Yeah, no, I mean, clearly we've, banked a very good, strong first half towards the full year numbers and the market consensus figures and so forth. We continue to see good trading. By the time we come to report, including the profitability measures, for the actual full half year results, subject to further sort of statutory adjustments and so forth, you'll see that operating leverage coming through into profitability and so forth. We continue to see, really good underlying growth drivers for the business, like the digitalization, some of the things that Jonathan was mentioning there, kind of the regulatory sustainability elements and so on, compliance, population growth, everything that's really driving the need to deliver projects to time, to cost, to everything else. So we're needed more than ever. We see AI as, a big opportunity, as Jonathan said as well, and as part of that delivery mechanism. So, we very much as a board feel confident in delivering the full year 2026 results, in line with those market expectations. And obviously, when we come to report, as I say, a little bit later, we can give more color on that. And we'll take a look then at where we are vis-a-vis the full year expectations. But right now, we remain very confident. Yeah, thank you.
Brilliant. Okay. Then, do you have any final words there, Jonathan? Maybe on pipeline or even, I mean, Neil's built up a £15 million war chest for you as well. Any tuck-in acquisitions? So, a bit on the pipeline, or perhaps bit on anything of M&A?
Yeah, we're. I think we're certainly continuing to innovate and explore partnerships and M&A opportunities. So our strategy is around those three pillars of, do we build, do we partner, or do we buy? There are many opportunities we're exploring. I think, there's nothing to report at this stage, but certainly a lot of activity on that front. It has to absolutely be the right business to acquire and contribute to the value of Alico. I think forward-looking, pipeline, it's just an exciting time to be a part of this journey. We continue to execute well against our strategy. We're delivering record ARR, strong organic growth. We have been working intensely to further improve the quality of and predictability of that revenue base with the recent acquisition of KeyView, the SaaS acquisition, and also divestment of Fuze. So, I think what you're seeing now is, well, I think you said it earlier, Paul. It's a really different profile of business now with the 85% recurring revenue. We've got better predictability and so forth. So I think that combination of high recurring revenue, strong customer retention, attractive markets, which I mentioned earlier, gives us real confidence for the future and for H2. I guess finally, as always, just like to thank our customers, employees, and shareholders for their support. We really look forward to updating everyone when we release our interim results in September.
Yeah, well, you certainly did historically. I mean, I remember you did the Shire and the PMAC acquisitions, both of those in that asset management sort of maintenance type business. I mean, they've been knockout deals. So if you have anything of that ilk, then those are blockbuster deals, those were. So look forward in, thanks again, gents. Look forward in touching base in a couple of months' time when the interims come out in September. But really, really well done.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.